Today is September 17th, 2018, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington, sitting in for Sarah Williams. Coming up, U.S. Supreme Court nominee's confirmation is in turmoil after an accusation surfaces from alleged 1980s incident. Also ahead, robots that look human.
I know how they work. I know that they're just machines, but something about something that just looks like a person but doesn't quite move like a person is disturbing.
And we'll preview the inter-Korean summit that starts Tuesday. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh arrived at the White House Monday after strongly denying that he sexually assaulted a teenage girl 3 decades ago when they were both in high school. The accusation has thrown his nomination to the lifetime appointment into turmoil. Christine Blasey Ford alleged in a Washington Post interview published Sunday that she feared for her life when Kavanaugh and a friend, both stumbling drunk, cornered her in a bedroom at a house party in suburban Washington in the early 1980s, and Kavanaugh groped her. All 10 Democratic Party members of the Senate Judiciary Committee are calling for the panel's Republican chairman to postpone Thursday's planned vote on Kavanaugh. Lawyer Deborah Katz, who was representing Ford, said her client was willing to testify about her allegation before the Senate panel. At least 65 people are dead after Typhoon Mangkhut tore through the Philippines. Rescuers in one town are digging through mud to retrieve bodies buried by a landslide caused by the storm. Farms across Luzon, the Philippines' largest island, are under floodwaters. Luzon farms produce most of the country's rice and corn. Now, however, their crops have been ruined just a month before harvest. Mangkhut has been downgraded from a typhoon to a tropical storm after reaching the southern Chinese province of Guangdong, where 4 people have been killed. Meanwhile, people in the southeastern United States are beginning to recover after Hurricane Florence pummeled North and South Carolina, where it stalled over the weekend. At least 17 people have died in the storm. VOA's Catherine Gibson is in North Carolina. Catherine, what dangers do people face?
Well, as you mentioned, Jim, the fact that this hurricane stalled over the region caused enormous headaches for rescue and emergency personnel here. The stalled hurricane dumped tons of rain on this area, and that means that the rivers are about to reach historic and significant levels of flooding that have the authorities very, very worried here.
So then, are people still evacuating from the areas where the flooding is expected?
They certainly are. They actually have now received a double round of evacuation orders, first from the hurricane and now from the flooding. And you know, authorities are telling people here, even the people who evacuated because of the hurricane, you're not going to be let back into your homes for some time now.
So even though the storm has moved on, we're still in the rescue phase as opposed to beginning to clean up.
We most certainly are. There are places like Wilmington, North Carolina, that are literal islands because they're surrounded by water and inaccessible by road right now. The only way you can get into them is by Coast Guard boat and helicopter.
That's VOA's Catherine Gibson reporting from North Carolina. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is accusing Russia of attempting to influence an upcoming referendum in Macedonia that would open the way for the country to join NATO. Peru's president wants the opposition-dominated Congress to hold a special session this week to debate the proposed anti-corruption measures. Guatemala's constitutional court has ruled that the country's president must allow the head of a United Nations-backed anti-graft commission back into the country. At least 23 people have been killed in ethnic violence near Ethiopia's capital. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute. Soon after a global dust storm on Mars began at the end of this past May, NASA was forced to suspend the science operations for their Opportunity Mars rover. Since the 14-year-old rover is solar-powered, the dust storm blocked the sun's rays from reaching its solar panels, cutting off its supply of power. The space agency now says its Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter tells them that the dust storm has been steadily dissipating and more sunlight is reaching Opportunity's solar panels. Hoping to revive the rover, NASA has increased the schedule of sending commands to it from 3 times a week to numerous times each day. John Callis, Opportunity Project Manager at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, says if no response is received from the rover within 45 days, the team will have to assume that the dust and the Martian cold have caused some type of fault that will not allow it to recover. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And this is VOA's International Edition. South Korean President Moon Jae-in will meet North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang Tuesday for their third summit of 2018. VOA's Steve Miller joins me from Seoul to preview the meeting. Steve, who else is traveling with President Moon?
Well, this is actually fairly interesting because we're talking about a really huge delegation totaling almost 200 people. In fact, right now in Pyongyang is President Moon's advance team, which consists of about 100 officials led by Seo-ho, who is the presidential secretary for unification policy. And in that team are a number of government officials, staff, and reporters. Now, they've been charged with preparing everything for President Moon's visit, and that includes setting up the local press center in Pyongyang that's going to beam back pictures to the rest of the world, as well as cars and vans that will be used during the summit. But tomorrow, when President Moon flies from Seoul to Pyongyang, there's actually going to be a whole slew of people, about 50-plus individuals, in addition to where we would normally see government officials like the foreign minister, Kang Kyung-hwa, defense minister, Song Yong-moo, and the unification minister. These 50-plus individuals will include the heads of Samsung, LG, and other big, massive conglomerates here in South Korea.
Well, it sounds like at least the South Koreans are ready for business over the next few days. Can you tell us what's on the agenda between the two Korean leaders?
Sure. Well, the primary focus of the meeting, according to Seoul officials, is going to be Moon and Kim talking about how to improve and develop inter-Korean relations. And it's also expected that Moon and Kim will work further to implement items that were outlined back in April during the first summit in the document known as the Panmunjom Declaration. Now, the second objective of President Moon is to mediate and promote denuclearization dialogue between North Korea and the United States, try and broker some kind of, really try to move forward the process since Washington is looking at trying to maintain maximum pressure through sanctions to the United Nations, while North Korea is looking for more of a staged process to move towards denuclearization. Moon and Kim are also expected to discuss ways to reduce tensions on the Korean Peninsula. That may include signing what's called a comprehensive military agreement. And again, that's one of the things that was outlined in the Panmunjom Declaration. And finally, President Moon is also going to stress the need to resolve lingering issues regarding separated families from the Korean War.
Okay, this is going to be a 3-day summit. What do you know about the schedule of events over the next few days?
Around 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, the president's going to leave the Blue House, which is the presidential residence. And around 8:40 in the morning local time, they're going to take off from the airport and arrive at about 10 a.m. local time in Pyongyang, where they'll have a welcome ceremony at the airport and then have a luncheon. Following lunch, that's when the first rounds of talks will be taking place. And while President Moon and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un are having their discussions, other members of the delegation are actually going to have side meetings with various North Korean officials related to whatever their area of expertise are. And then in the afternoon, we're also told that there's going to be an art performance followed by a welcome dinner. And that's going to pretty much wrap up the first day of the summit.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Miller will be following the summit for us over the next few days. Monday marks the 40th anniversary of the so-called Camp David Accords, two documents negotiated at the U.S. presidential retreat between Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin and Egyptian President Anwar Sadat. They were signed in a White House ceremony September 17, 1978, presided by then-President Jimmy Carter. One document outlined the basis of a peace settlement between Israel and its Arab neighbors, the second a peace treaty between Egypt and Israel. Camp David led to the 1993 Oslo Accords between Israel and the Palestinians and an Israeli-Jordanian peace treaty in 1994. Russell Stone, professor emeritus at the Center for Israel Studies at American University, spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about the state of Israeli-Egyptian relations today.
It's often been called a cold peace in the sense that while the peace treaty has never been abrogated or violated, and there is a fair amount of military cooperation between Israel and Egypt, The other dimensions of normalization, trade, tourism, travel, have not been as warm and open as particularly the Israelis had hoped. In the early years, there was a rush of Israeli tourism, a desire to see and get to know Egypt, partly because Israelis felt very severely the landlocked nature of the state. But over the years, that has waned, and there's not been a reverse flow of very much interest in either travel or trade or tourism of Egyptians to Israel.
Those are sentiments that are echoed by the nephew of the late President Anwar Sadat. His name is Mohammed Anwar Sadat. He says there is a psychological barrier between us, referring to the Egyptians, and the Israeli people. Do you see that as well?
On the Egyptian side, I think there is. From the time Israel was established, the Egyptian military created Israel as the image of an arch enemy. Partly this was done by President Nasser and after him by Sadat as a way of diverting attention from internal difficulties within Egypt, economic problems, high unemployment, little economic advance, so that there were generations of Egyptians that grew up with an image of antagonism toward Israel. The Israeli diplomatic presence in Cairo, the facilities that they rent as an embassy and a consulate, have been attacked from time to time and are under very strict security.
Well, the two documents signed at Camp David was called Framework for Peace in the Middle East, which outlined the basis of a peace settlement between Israel and its Arab neighbors. What is the status of peace efforts now?
That framework negotiation, which was the second agreement that was signed, actually referred to the Palestinians, and it was conducted without participation by the Palestinians. So it was immediately rejected as not being acceptable by Palestinians, and indeed was viewed coldly by most other Arab leaders as well. The fact of the matter is that most of the items that were in it later became a part of the Oslo Accords between Israel and the PLO, signed 15 years after Camp David.
Russell Stone said 40 years on, peace remains between Egypt and Israel, although the peace is not as broad nor as deeply felt as many had hoped. He said the lack of peace between Israel and the Palestinians is seen as one of the reasons other Arab leaders hold back from normalizing ties with Israel. Moving to the United States, in rural Pennsylvania, the small city of Hazleton has come out of a transformative decade, the former police chief tells us. In the early 2000s, a wave of immigrants and first-generation Americans moved to the area, seeking jobs and a better way of life. In the 2016 election, Donald Trump narrowly edged out Hillary Clinton. Now a native son is Trump's hand-picked candidate to challenge Pennsylvania's Senator Bob Casey. VOA's immigration reporter Aline Barros visited the former coal mine town to talk with former chief Frank DeAndrea and others about immigration and the upcoming midterm election.
Hazleton has always been my home. I watched Hazleton transform as a Pennsylvania State Police trooper.
About 130 kilometers northwest of Philadelphia, Hazleton has some 25,000 residents. 50% of them are Hispanic, up from 5% in 2000. Former police chief Frank DeAndrea says the influx has sparked fear.
Fear is an ugly thing. And it doesn't only happen to a human being, it happens to a community, where a community becomes so afraid they can't move forward.
Hazleton's one-time mayor, U.S. Representative Lou Barletta.
Thank you.
Who's challenging Democrat Bob Casey for his Senate seat, is an immigration hardliner. Barletta sponsored a city ordinance in 2006 aimed at making Hazleton the toughest place on illegal immigrants in America.
I'm a pro-America first, and I know that he is too.
Knocking on doors for Barletta, Connie Crimey says she's a Republican conservative Latina.
I'm a volunteer for the Republican Party. I believe that if the Latino or Hispanic community wants to be part of the America, first of all, you got to come here legally, get the jobs, learn English. And I don't see that as anything as discriminatory or racist.
But the ordinance, ultimately rejected by a federal appeals court, left an impact in the community.
Keep in mind that we have a lot of Irish, a lot of Italians, and they all years ago came here as immigrants, and they did get along, but they each had their own section of the city. But eventually, they learned to get along with each other. Yes. So I think it's just going to take some time.
Are you happy to be back?
To Bob Curry, co-founder of a group that runs after-school programs for more than 1,000 children weekly, it's not feasible to have two societies running parallel. And he says they will come together.
And when Johnny goes to his Little League baseball game and Jose hits a home run and your team goes to the championship, you're not so anxious to see Jose sent back to that wherever he came from story. Life happens.
For now, how people in Hazleton will vote in November is complicated, since many know Barletta. And yet, the city's population has changed.
We have to get more involved in local politics. We need to see the politics and the politicians and the elections in this area, in Hazleton.
And nobody knows if the Latino community will turn out and vote. Aline Barros, VOA News, Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Visit voanews.com for more on the upcoming midterm elections. I'm Jim Bertel, and you're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
And you're listening to International Edition. Researchers are working to create robots that can do all types of jobs. And now some scientists are trying to make androids, or robots that appear human. But androids can make some people feel uneasy. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains this feeling or phenomenon known as the uncanny valley.
Robots come in all shapes and sizes. Some are cute and make people smile. Others look a little too human and make people uncomfortable, including researchers.
I know how they work. I know that they're just machines. But something about something that just looks like a person but doesn't quite move like a person is disturbing.
That growing feeling of unease as a robot looks too human is called the uncanny valley. Computer science and psychology professor Jonathan Gratch says there are many explanations behind the uncanny valley phenomenon. One is that it is biological, people instinctively recognize when something seems wrong.
In my research, I study emotion and how we use emotional cues to read each other's minds. And I think a lot of the issue for me is if we try to make something very realistic, then you start trying to read all this information into what it's portraying, and it's not the right information. And so it just communicates something is off, something is wrong with this interaction.
Another explanation is a robot that looks too human threatens what it means to be human.
Initially, humans were seen as, you know, the only intelligent entity. And now we know more and more that animals can do many of the things we do, build tools. We know machines are starting to become intelligent. We hold on to the fact we're emotional, but now these machines are starting to be emotional as well, which is perhaps a threat. So where does that leave people?
The environments that we've been designing for ourselves.
John Rabula is working on making this humanoid robot, Hermes, walk more like a person by being more coordinated and balanced. He says the robot's face is not necessary and is clearly cosmetic.
But we really do think of these as research machines that we're ripping apart and putting back together and ripping apart and putting back together. And so it's very easy for us to leave off the cosmetic bits.
Hermes can be considered cute, but if he looked more human...
I don't know if I'd want to be in the lab with a very human-like robot looking at me all the time. We have lots of late nights in lab and things are... You start, you know, yelling at the robot a little bit as it is. Oh, why aren't you working? And so I don't necessarily myself need that extra layer of weird.
People who design machines to work with humans do keep the uncanny valley in mind.
But unfortunately, today I cannot give...
As they think about creating the robot's look.
That's what Jamie said this morning.
Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
It's a big night in Hollywood as the red carpet is rolled out for the 70th Emmy Awards. The Emmy is given to the top television programs. AP Entertainment editor Oscar Wells Gabriel says, don't be surprised if you mistake the award show for a popular comedy show.
It's Saturday Night Live!
You might think it's Saturday Night Live, but it isn't. At the same time, tonight's Emmy broadcast will borrow heavily from the talent involved in the weekly comedy show that airs on the very same network, NBC. Calling the shots on the show will be SNL creator Lorne Michaels, the host Michael Che and Colin Jost, who anchor the Weekend Update segment. Two of the presenters will be Saturday Night Live alumni, Kate McKinnon and Tina Fey, and McKinnon joins President Trump impersonator Alec Baldwin and three other cast members as nominees. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, VOA Now, or follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, engineer John Dryden. Thanks so much. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington.
Take your pick, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
My name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.